Shriver is the Senior Vice President of U.S. Programs at Save the Children. He created the CHOICE program, served in the Maryland State Legislature for 8 years, and was chair of the National Commission on Children and Disasters. His new book, A Good Man, Rediscovering My Father, Sergeant Shriver, has just been published, and we're going to speak with him about it. Welcome, Mark. Thanks so much for stopping by the Book Report.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
I want to tell you that I've read the book, and what is so striking about it is, of course, it's a very poignant memoir, but it's also so immediately accessible. I mean, from page one, you're just drawn into the family history, the story, the magnitude of what a fabulous man your father was, what a good man your father was.
Well, thank you. It's really a story of a son trying to figure out who his dad was and what made him good. And it's just a series of stories and how I understood him and came to better understand him from the time he died to right to today.
I wanted to just jump right in and ask you, we know so much about the history of the Kennedy family. Could you tell us a little bit about it, the history of the Shriver family, your grandparents and great-grandparents?
Well, it was my dad used to always talk about the Shriver family, and I dug into and got a little bit more familiar with the family history, and it really is a deep and rich history in the state of Maryland. My father's side of the family was involved in the drafting of the Maryland Constitution. His mother's side of the family, his mother and father were second cousins. So they were from Western Maryland in Carroll County and Washington County. And his grandfather, his mom's dad, literally took Jeb Stuart to the Battle of Gettysburg as a 16-year-old kid. So the Shriver family was split between the North and the South. My mother, my grandmother's side of the family on the Shriver side was Catholic and with the South. And my grandfather's side of the family was Protestant and with the North. And that man then, after the war was over, went into the seminary, dropped out because he was sick, went in a second time, and again dropped out and he was sick, but became very good friends with a guy named James Gibbons, who would go on to become the second cardinal in America from Baltimore, James Cardinal Gibbons, who ended up being my dad's godfather. So the Shriver family had not only a deep political connection, economic connection, they had the biggest grist mill in Carroll County, and my father recalled as a boy waking up in the summertime and seeing the horse-drawn carts bringing the corn in to be grounded in the Shriver grist mill. So my father's connection to Maryland dated centuries. They were connected through the political system, the economic system. And I have in the book, A Good Man, a picture of President William Howard Taft visiting with Cardinal Gibbons in the Shriver home up in Western Maryland with my grandfather, Shriver, in the background and a bunch of other Shrivers in there as well. So it's a deep and rich history that my father was very proud of.
And the pictures add so much to the book. I enjoyed looking at them. Your dad was a loyal member of the Kennedy clan, yet he managed to separate his identity from them. How was he able to do that?
I think he had that very strong sense of the Shriver family history that they had been grounded in and rooted in, really, Maryland history for over 200 years. I think his faith that he got from his mother and father, which was tested in the Depression. You know, the father moved the family from Baltimore, Maryland, up to New York City to start a bank in 1929, which was obviously terrible timing, and a couple of years later had to declare bankruptcy. And my dad had to work himself through high school, through Yale, Yale University and Yale Law School on scholarships and gifts from family friends. I think that faith was tested during the Depression. I think that faith was tested in World War II. My father enrolled in the Navy the day after his final exam in law school. He was in the Navy before Pearl Harbor happened and fought in very brutal battle in the Battle of Guadalcanal and the Battle of Santa Cruz. And I think it was tested, but I think it came out of the war and the Depression even stronger and gave him a strong sense of who he was in relationship to his mom and dad, so that when he came out of World War II and went to work for Newsweek and then to be hired by Joe Kennedy to run the merchandise mart, he knew who he was. He was a smart guy. He was very strategic. He'd gone to one of the best, if not the best, law schools in the country, and he'd done it on his own, and he had been supported through gifts from friends and scholarships. So he was a smart guy, and I think that really grounded him for the rest of his life. He was obviously very strong, positive relationship with the extended Kennedy family, but he knew who he was.
How did your dad actually meet your mom, Eunice Kennedy?
He actually, my dad went to high school at a school called Canterbury in Connecticut, and Jack Kennedy was a couple years behind my dad. He went there for a year and then dropped out. So he knew Jack Kennedy, later to be President Kennedy, a little bit, but he then knew my mom's older sister, Kathleen, pretty well because of his connections in New York society. You know, he went to Yale, and they went to parties and overlapped with members of the Kennedy family, specifically Jack and Kathleen. And after the war, he met my mom at a party in New York, asked her out a couple of days later, and then the rest is history. It took 7 years, though, of courtship for them to finally get married in 1953.
Mm-hmm. The day after Jack Kennedy was sworn in as president, he called your dad and asked him to create the Peace Corps. Your mother was the founder of the Special Olympics. How have you and your siblings made public service your own?
Well, I think the amazing thing about Dad is that he was asked after President Kennedy got elected to go out and recruit the cabinet and the assistant cabinet secretaries. So he was really the headhunter for the best and the brightest. So clearly, President-elect Kennedy had great confidence in him. He ran the Civil Rights Division during the campaign. He then went out and recruited, as I said, the cabinet secretaries and the undersecretaries. And then Uncle Jack asked him to create the Peace Corps really out of nothing. There was no money. There was no blueprint. There was no offices. There was a lot of skepticism from former President Eisenhower. The Wall Street Journal editorialized against it. The State Department wanted it to be part of the State Department. And foreign governments thought that it was another way for the government of the U.S. to spy on them. So there was a lot of opposition. So I think that what we learned and what I learned from my mother and father, and my mom created Special Olympics out of nothing. What I learned from them really is you have to be very smart, you have to be very focused, and you have to work harder than anybody if you're going to try to create something in the nonprofit arena, to create something that's going to make a difference in people's lives. I just gravitated towards working with kids out of college in a program I started for juvenile delinquent kids in Baltimore. Then I was in elected office in the Maryland legislature, and now my work at Save the Children. They've taught us to be strategic, focused, really work hard, and to be committed to what you do, and also to find great joy in it, that it's not a labor of agony, but it's a labor of love.
You write repeatedly about how your dad was crazy in love with your mom. It was a joy to read, but it also must put a very high bar on relationships that you and your siblings have with your spouses. Talk about that.
They were happily married for 53 years. They went out for 7 years. It took a while, I guess, for my mom to say yes. But, you know, my sister, when Maria eulogized my mom, she said that dad let her rip and roar and he was behind her, 100%. And I think he was. And I think when you contextualize the fact that women were not as prominent as they are today, and even women are discriminated against today, but in the 50s and in the 60s, when my mom was pushing the idea of having people with developmental disabilities do athletic activities in our house, in our backyard. And then when my dad became ambassador to France, my mother turned the embassy of the United States in Paris, of all places, into a training facility for people with developmental disabilities inside the embassy and in the backyard. So my father, I think, knew that he loved her, and that's what love demanded, was to support his wife in her pursuits of bringing people with developmental disabilities out of locked facilities, out of the shadows, and bringing them into the sunshine.
This is a wonderful book about your dad, but there's so much of you in it as well. Talk a little about what you've called the Kennedy claustrophobia.
I just think when you come from a big family, I call it the Kennedy claustrophobia, but I think if you come from a big family, they all have their own dynamics. Every family, you know, has its dynamics going on there. And in our case, there was a lot of competition. You know, I was growing up a fat kid. Everybody's either called a fat kid or a skinny kid. Some are, losers. Some are part of the in crowd. You know, every family has its quirks, and people struggle within that structure. They're obviously incredibly supportive structures. And I had, almost 30 first cousins. So the love and support, I'm still friends with all of them. The support they give me and the encouragement they give my kids and the support they give my kids is fantastic. But having 28 cousins around then in a highly competitive family, both politically and socially and academically, was a little overwhelming for me.
Do you take your kids up to Hyannisport in the summer, or are there still great, great clan gatherings?
There is a lot of folks in Hyannisport in the summertime, yeah. And my kids, all have their first cousins, and then their my cousin's kids are running around there. Everybody's, you know, they don't say I'm second cousin once removed or whatever they are. They're all cousins. And I think in this book, I was trying to figure out how to find my own identity and how to emulate a guy, my father, who retained his own sense of identity in all of this joyous chaos that was going on in the 60s and 70s and 80s when I was a kid and into the 90s. And I think the notes he wrote me and slipped under my door, the way he acted around my mom, the way he acted around my uncles, and the way he acted around all the people, his friends, showed me how to be a good man.
One thing that was really wonderful in the book is many of your father's notes were reproduced in his own handwriting in the book. It added a lot. Talk about that.
Well, when I was in high school, Dad used to slip notes under my door almost every night. And he would write a note about the dinner conversation the night before, maybe something he read in the sports page, maybe something that he had thought about. Maybe it was a book, and he'd mark in the margins the important parts of that chapter of a book that he had read. Oftentimes, if it was about people, he would clearly make it clear how he thought people should behave. And those notes are really powerful. They're so much different than email or text now. Kids can delete those or can forget about them. But when you have that handwritten note in your father or mother's handwriting, you can feel the texture of their penmanship. You can see what they're writing. And at different stages of your life, they mean different things. It's just a powerful thing to see, you know, someone's handwriting and to know that they sat down to pen something to you and took the time to write it in longhand. And I think that's really powerful. And if nothing else comes of this book, someone who reviewed it told me that at the end of it, that he wrote his son a note and slipped it under his son's door the night he finished the book because his kid was graduating from high school the next day. So if nothing else comes of it other than people write their kids maybe a note or two more a year than they did in the past, and it's not on email or text, that would be a beautiful thing because I think the kid can read it and learn from it throughout the rest of their life.
Okay, readers, I want to tell you that A Good Man is a great read for this summer, and I encourage you to definitely pick it up. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.